From News Hub, it's the Cup Podcast with Tom McRae and Mel Chan Green.
American Magic flying into that gate for the final time. And they were the loyal squall here.
Whoa, hang on here.
American Magic!
Hello and welcome to The Cup, a News Hub podcast where each week we're going to bring you behind the scenes info in the lead up to Team New Zealand defending the Old Mug. We'll have some expert commentary and members of the teams who'll be able to give us some insights into the characters of the Cup, the spies, the games, the highs, the lows and the spills, as we've seen. Hosted by myself, Melissa Chan Green and Tom McRae. We've swapped out the news desk for the News Hub launch, we wish, or the dinghy maybe. But we did actually tag along on a boat at the weekend, and what a weekend it was to kick off the Prada Cup.
It had pretty much everything that you could imagine in 3 days of sailing. You had, you know, the mid-range, 14 knots, a massive comeback from Ineos Team UK. Then you had no wind on the second day where they were struggling to get out of the water, basically. And then you had the complete other end of the scale where it was blowing an absolute gale, and that's when we saw American Magic take a massive tumble. And I guess at this point in time, it's the biggest talking point since racing has began.
And right when they were winning the race too, they'd had such a nightmare couple of days, and then they were finally getting some luck, and then this happened.
Yeah, well, we've got a couple of very, very special guests who know a whole lot more about the America's Cup and sailing in general than both Melissa and I do. We've got dialing in from San Francisco, obviously unable to get down to Auckland because of the border closures, is Tom Eamon, who has been involved in America's Cup since, I think, 1980, with, I think, four different yacht clubs. The last one was with Oracle in San Fran. Welcome, Tom. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom, and to Richard and to Melissa.
Yeah, our other guest is Richard Gladwell, who is the editor of Sail World. Now, I don't know anyone who is quite as dedicated to the America's Cup as Richard, because almost every day when the AC75s have been out on the water in Auckland, not racing, but when they were practicing from the day they were launched, he has been huddled down in this amazing little spot on the side of North Head on Auckland's North Shore with about three cameras just trying to capture every little detail on every single one of the boats. So welcome. Thank you very much for coming
along,
Richard.
Greetings. Great to be here.
We've taken you off the side of North Head, and we've also taken some sleep off you because Richard was up working still at 3:30 in the morning, as you can imagine, after the late night antics with American Magic. What were you seeing out there?
You got to look at it as a whole day. So what we started out with was Ian Murray's briefing, who's the regatta director, and that was at 10:30. And basically what he said was that it was going to be a wind change come through around about 4 o'clock, between 4 o'clock and 6 o'clock, and there's going to be rain. And at 11 minutes past 6, that's when Dean Barker was going around that mark with in a rain squall that was entirely predictable. So, and the direction of the wind was from the northwest, which I've always regarded as a really bad direction to be out there.
It's so unpredictable that it'll be relatively calm, and then all of a sudden you'll get a big squall come through and take you by surprise? Is that what happened yesterday?
Yeah, that's exactly right, yeah. And the squalls started coming out. The first one came out during the first race, and suddenly the wind increased, then it swung and dropped. And then it came back in and turned the course into a soldier's course, and that's at the point when Ian Murray blew it up.
So just the moment of capsize, who is that on? Is that just a freak gust of wind that could have happened to anyone at that point in time, or should they have even been trying that manoeuvre? Is it on Dean Barker and Terry Hutchinson, the skipper of American Magic?
No, it was a real bad combination of circumstances that, you know, came in almost, you know, like a perfect storm. And so Dean was all lined up to go around the mark, and we'd seen this rain squall coming through, and we were actually going to go, you know, another couple of hundred metres and get out on the other side, which is the side he was taking to go around. We decided, saw the rain, just going to be hopeless, we'll go down and get them at the finish and, you know, get American Magic's first finish. And we had a photographer on board from American Magic, and they were really keen to get the shot. So we headed off down, and we'd just only been going down probably 10, 15, 30 seconds. And, you know, the shout went up from the back, they're going in. And we just looked around, and I saw this AC-75 just flying through the air like it was a kite, and then go smack on the side, and then it capsized. We'd seen Team New Zealand go in, you know, a couple of weeks earlier, and they'd been really quick to get the boat up, and it only took 2 minutes. This one, it stayed on its side for a long time.
Tom, even I might just bring you in here. What was your initial thought when you saw them go up, go over?
I was doing a webcast, a live webcast, and the first thing, Tom, that I thought of, I said, oh my God, he's going over. This is like the race when he almost went over, Dean, driving, almost capsized here in San Francisco 2013.
The damage that's been done, I mean, we've seen these boats capsize before, but we've never seen them, you know, come out of the water with a massive hole in the bow. What do we know about what caused that, and how detrimental will that be to them, you know, being able to get this boat back up and running?
Well, I've been talking to people last night, late and this morning, and watching videos and rewatching and looking at pieces floating by the stern of the boat on the TV. This, in fact, just before we started doing this, I'm led to believe by everything I'm hearing and seeing that when they went up, and virtually all of the boat, if you've looked at a slow-mo replay or a stop-action replay, virtually the entire boat was out of the water except the elevator, which is the T-foil on the bottom of the rudder in the back, and the port foil at the end of the foil arm. Virtually the rest of the boat's out of the water. And you can even see, Richard, I'm sure you saw it on replays, the bullet nose of the foil on the port foil. So it's launched. It looks like a whale breaching. And then it comes crashing back down. And as it's doing that, it's also got some angular momentum. The boat is turning toward the wind, because we don't go into the technicalities. And it's putting enormous load on that leeward or port foil arm. When it comes crashing down, one hears that the mechanism inside the boat was under such load that it tore away from the hull, and also then caused a hole in the hull, which the team, by Terry Hutchinson's own report, right after that they issued in their own press release, they were not aware of the hole. And you see the boat then on its side, six guys up in the cubby hole on what is the starboard bunker, so to speak, and then five down in the water, including T. Hutch and Dino and others. So you've counted for 11, and that's the first thing we did on the watching the telecast. That's the first thing Kenny Reed said on the telecast. Thank God they're all there. All 11 are present and accounted for, and they look like they're fine. And that, of course, is everyone's first concern. Then you're watching, and you see them finally get it upright. And by then, the TV, World Feed, had gone off the air, and Live, Sail, Die, your very fine website down there that's been doing a lot of live video to Facebook and YouTube, they pick up the feed. Sue Ellen, what's her name, Richard?
Sue Ellen Herring.
Who's their videographer. She's not really a reporter. She now is doing some reporting and the videography from their TV boat, and we go on to that. Now I've got picking up even more people around the world, and when they get the boat upright, first thing I say to my group watching is, my goodness, the decks are awash. This boat didn't pop up like ETNZ's boat did when they capsized, a couple weeks ago, and it popped right up, and the boat was good. They towed in and sailed the next day. The decks are awash. They've got a lot of water inside the hull. Nobody at that point, including me, knew that there was a hole in the port topsides of the boat.
We did start hearing that it was seriously in danger of sinking at that point, and we understand that Team New Zealand was one of the first boats out there to help them put some floats underneath. Yeah. I mean, I guess what people will want to know is, how detrimental is this to American Magic? Can they bounce back for it? I guess we saw in Bermuda that Team New Zealand pitch-poled and had some serious damage. Is this the same scale? Can American Magic come back, Richard?
Well, they've got to basically do a full assessment on it. And, you've got two issues there. I mean, we've seen the photo there with the square hole in the side of it, which I've heard is a battery pack's fallen through this, come loose and gone through the side. But the concerning thing there is that you can see a whole lot of carbon shards hanging out of the hull further up, which indicates probably that the hull's shattered there. The difficulty that you, once they go through and do that assessment, I mean, doing the hull repair is actually not that difficult for one reason that, you know, fortunately it's happened in Auckland and you've got a massive marine industry here and some outstanding people and facilities, and you've also got people here that know how to get things done quickly. The way that you normally repair a hull like that is you just lay up a new piece in the old moulds and then just cut a hole out and plug it in. And that's really what Ben Ainslie did in 2017 when he rode up over the top of Dean Barker and punched a big hole in the bottom of the boat that was so big that a person could climb through it. It was about 4 or 5 metres long. So he fixed that overnight. Team New Zealand, as we know, when they capsized, they got a boat running overnight, but it wouldn't have won. And then for the day after, they got it fixed. The issue will be with the electrics and how that's all been put together. And the other thing is that outside the teams, no one's really had their heads down below one of those boats. But I've heard that it's a sailing technology paradise down there. It's just, you know, everything is jammed in there, and really how long that takes to rewire it. The interesting point will be how that below decks has been designed, whether it's been designed to be super waterproof. And if that's the case, then they probably don't have that much of a problem. If it's like a normal boat where they don't really worry about weight or anything like that in there, and they just run the wires loose, you've got a major problem because you've got to rewire the whole boat.
Tom, you know both Terry Hutchinson, the skipper of American Magic, and Dean Barker pretty well. What will be happening inside the big debrief that they will no doubt be undertaking?
Well, the first thing is, just as Richard is saying, they've got to assess the situation in the boat, and they will have been doing that all night. And they will sit down as a small group, sort of an executive committee, and talk about what happened, what they want to tell the rest of the team, what the message is and the messaging is. But then they will be assessing what they can do and when can they complete it. I doubt very much whether they will, and they'll have, you know, what are our alternatives? What are our options? People are saying they have the option to roll out B1, as we call it, their first boat, Defiant. Not a chance. I don't see, because that boat's been decommissioned. They have parts that have been used from that boat into Patriot. And unless Patriot is ruined beyond use, I don't think that's going to happen. They will make the assessment Richard's just referred to. Are the electronics okay? Are they kaput? Do we have to? And they've got backups for all that. That's not a problem. Putting in installing them is one thing. Repairing the hull is another. Not just the hull, but the delamination that's going on, as Richard referred. That's a problem. And then remember, they have to get measured. First, they have to test it, be sure it all works. Then they have to get measured on. It's Monday there now. They have to get measured on Wednesday for racing, which starts Friday. I don't see how that's going to happen. Moreover,
I think they're going to flag that.
Flag what?
They won't be able to race BY, and they certainly won't be able to race B2, so they don't have a boat.
Flag it, meaning they'll skip it.
The way the Prader Cup works is that there's another round robin where you get points, but essentially there's a semi or a repechage that the bottom two teams get through to anyway, right? So if they don't race this weekend, they'll still get through to the semi, so they still have a chance. Mm.
Would that be the smart play where you just, you know, right off this weekend, just go make sure that you're up and running as best as you can be for that semi-final?
Mm. Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. I think they will. There's no way they'll get into the racing. I agree with Richard. They'll flag it. That's a new expression on me, Richard. And they won't race this coming. They won't race this weekend, as you're saying, Melissa, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But that's okay, because the top team out of the rounds robin,
what I kind of want to know as well is the personalities. You've got, you know, Dean and Terry. Is anyone going to take overall responsibility for the maneuver that actually put them in this position? Who's it on?
Internally, they will, but they won't externally.
What I saw on the water, that hot, and the video, which I've gone back and looked at the international one, the TVNZ one, and the on-the-boat one, The whole thing just looked absolutely locked and loaded. Dean didn't have much of a chance to fly out of it. His last words were, as the boat went airborne, was, "I've lost the rudder," which basically means that the rudder's ventilated, so it's sucking air down. And what happens in these boats when that happens is that it's like losing the tail on a plane. The thing just rears up. It's driving upwards at 40 knots, and that's what generates that rate of climb. And the interesting thing to look at with that boat is actually how steep it's coming out of the water, which is really steep compared to the other ones we've seen with, Luna Rossa and
But Richard, with respect, that's not the question. The question is, should have they tacked around the upwind left end of the gate as they did do, which then led to this cascade, this perfect storm, as you called it earlier, or should have they just done the safe maneuver as Paul Goodison, Goody, in the back end of the boat is saying, I would just continue. I would do a slow bear away, meaning go around the upwind right end of the gate, do the slower, safer bear away. They've got a 500 meter lead, 490 meter lead at that point.
Why risk it?
So Tom, that's the discussion. Are you hearing criticism of individual sailors or Dean Barker in particular, are you?
I don't know who made the decision. We can't hear Terry Hutchinson, who is ultimately the tactician and the skipper, because his comms for the audio coming off for the TV, at least, was not, you couldn't hear it for whatever reason. So I don't know who's to blame. It doesn't really matter. The point is the boat has to make a choice. Do you tack or do you bear away and go around the upwind right end of the gate? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of criticism, yes, of them not having taken the safer maneuver around the upwind right into the gate, bear away, and then get their feet under themselves and then jibe, go down the track in the breeze.
From News Up, it's the Cup Podcast.
I just want to bring in a kind of semi-regular section of the podcast that we're calling Characters of the Cup, where we're looking at some of the main players and their relationships with others. And look at Dean Barker and his relationships with the other helmsmen in the Challenger Series. So we've got Jimmy Spittle and Luna Rossa and Ben Ainslie, of course, in Ineos Team UK. Dean Barker has had a choppy road to get even to this point, right? I remember interviewing him after San Fran, and there was the launch of the America's Cup teams, and he just couldn't even look at Jimmy Spittle, and Jimmy Spittle wouldn't look at him either. But then not long after that, when Dean Barker left Team New Zealand and went to Team Japan, they actually became quite good friends because Oracle and Team Japan were helping each other out. Richard, can you just talk a little bit about Dean Barker in particular and how much this cup means to him? And what it will mean to him to have a good result here.
Yeah, was it meant to be his big comeback?
Well, you never quite know with these guys. But the thing is that they're part of a team now, and it's like, Formula One. I mean, you've only got, single driver and or a couple of drivers in a Formula One team, and you've got that cast of thousands behind them. So in terms of Dean's role, I think he's in there to do the best job he can. If he can, get a win out of it, then he'll really, think, well, I've, been vindicated a little bit. But, I don't really think he's got too much to prove either. The thing you've got to remember with these skippers out here, there's only a handful of people in the world that have actually sailed, big boats up in the 70-foot mark so they can handle the crew and also have done the foiling. And, we're just about seeing all of those in this event. And the other thing that's interesting too is when you look at the, four, say five skippers in there, if you count Francesco Bruni, is that four of them are all in the same, age group. They're all sort of mid-40s and up. And then you've got the guys like, Peter Burling and all the young guys coming through. And it's quite a different sort of chemistry there. The older guys all know each other. They've been on the same teams, competed against each other in different classes and all that sort of thing. Whereas Burling's outside that. And
but he has the achievements already, which is exactly what's so fascinating about him, isn't it?
But I mean, he's just a once in a lifetime talent. Mm. I mean, it's just no way about it. It's incredible to watch.
Ben Ainslie, Tom, is also a massive talent, isn't he? And someone that if you're a Team New Zealand fan, you should be wary of, because of course, he came in, as you know, back in San Fran to help with the Oracle comeback. He didn't have such a good campaign in Bermuda, but we're seeing now, as we saw on Friday, their absolute dominance in the Prada Cup so far.
Yeah, Ben is the most decorated sailor, and Olympic sailor in the history of our sport, and he's also tenacious, tough, and you've seen what he's done now to get Ineos Team UK back on track after a disastrous regatta pre-Christmas. And he also, as you said, came onto our boat, Oracle Team USA, here in 2013 in San Francisco, and was a big part of the comeback when Dean was up 8-1 and then we ultimately won 9-8. And that
all
is
right, don't rub
going,
it in.
Well, I'm not rubbing it in. You asked the question about
no,
about
it was an
Dean
amazing
and,
comeback.
And Team New Zealand, and it was an amazing comeback, but you saw Jimmy, what he did to him on the press conference, Dean on the press conference stage. So Dean is wearing that. Now, Dean is also, as Richard said, one of the very few sailors on the planet that's capable of sailing a boat this size and also doing the foiling. And he's a terrific sailor and a great guy. And there's talk all around the waterfront and all around the world this morning, will Dean get replaced? And I there's no way, historically, and I go back in the Cup to 1980 and even before that, you never have seen success in replacing a helmsman, a skipper, at this stage in the Cup. It just doesn't work and it won't work. And I doubt very much whether you'll see any change in the afterguard. You'll see some, I think one of the problems is Terry Hutchinson, as people have pointed out, Terry, who's the tactician, the skipper, the executive director, is grinding. He's 54 years old. And I don't know how you all would feel about grinding after five legs, plus running the campaign, plus worrying about everything else, and then being out there calling tactics in a boat that's going 40 to 50 knots.
Is it a bit like when Grant Dalton was on board while he was trying to run the entire campaign as well?
Exactly.
Yeah,
but I mean, that worked when Blake did it in 95.
So, it was a different era.
Yeah, well, the boat's going a lot slower.
And, Dennis Conner could steer and run his campaigns too, and it was a different era.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to look at most likely now, a little segment to cap off the podcast. And perhaps these most likely questions are seeming a little bit more obvious than they were when I first wrote them on Friday. But
it's amazing how quickly things change,
things
right?
Change.
You know, and he also a massive comeback after, you know, being ridden off by half of the commentators out there. And then obviously American Magic, who were meant to be the front runners to take out the Prada Cup after what we saw before Christmas and the Christmas regatta. You know, don't have a point on the board and they don't have a boat they can put in the water at the moment. So amazing how quickly things can change.
Yeah. Tom, I'm going to go to you first. We've got three most likely questions. We've got most likely to win the Prada Cup, most likely to win the America's Cup, and most likely to pull off a big surprise. So what's your pick for most likely to win the Prada Cup at this point?
Well, you have to. Everybody has to go with Ineos at this point based on the most recent performance. I was picking New York Yacht Club's American Magic up until even last night. So I think anyone betting against them and your tab in Las Vegas, I don't know if there's betting in Las Vegas on the Cup, but your tab is it TA? What do you call it? TAB. So, yeah, you have to go with Ineos to win the Prada Cup. You have to go with Team New Zealand, as I've been saying all along. You know, in the long history of the Cup, the defender, after winning the Cup, has never lost their first defense, except, as Richard will tell you, 1987. The 1987, the Aussies lost the Cup on their first defense.
The Swiss nicked our tight five and beat us. I mean, what do you expect?
No. That was no. That was you won your for you. You won the Cup.
Oh yeah.
In 95, brought it back. You successfully defended in 2000, then lost it in 03 after Ernesto Bertarelli took Russell and the Brad and the tight five away. Okay.
The interesting thing on all that is that
you still won it on your first defense, though, Richard. So let me just finish up. And now you've won the Cup again. The only yacht club, Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron, that deserves a lot of credit. Only club to have won it, lost it, and won it back. So will you win it this time? Almost certainly. And the big surprise, Melissa, is if New York Yacht Club's American Magic can get their boat back together and get their act back together and have the potential that we were expecting to see of and from them. And they come back and win the Prada Cup and then pull off some kind of an amazing surprise in the match.
And yes or no, do you think that will happen?
I doubt it.
That's a no. Okay, Richard Gladwell, most likely to win the Prada Cup?
Oh, well, I think Ineos, it's just, you know, hands down now, really.
Most likely to win the America's Cup?
Still leading with Ineos. With Team New Zealand.
You're going to kick you out of the land of the long white cloud.
But the rate of improvement on Ineos is very rapid and it's very steep, and no one knows what they've done.
And most likely to pull off a big surprise. Can be an individual or a team.
I think it'll be Team New Zealand pulling out a Code Zero.
Tell the audience what a Code Zero is for those who are not.
Code Zero is what you actually, that's why the bowsprit's on these boats. So you've got a big jib there that creates an enormous amount of power. 6 days of racing. On three of those days, if you'd had a Code Zero, you would have got foiling and you'd have won. And I think these guys, the challenges are taking a huge risk not going down that path.
And as we know, the winds are just going to get lighter and lighter as Auckland summer traditionally goes along. So we're not going to see, you know, massive big, big high wind days.
Well, this is one of the problems is that the, you know, American Magic say they've gone out and done the analysis on the weather and, you know, they're saying, oh, this isn't what it should be. Well, I mean, Auckland's just a sand spit in the Southern Ocean. You can't, it's not a continent. You can't say the weather's going to do this from one year to the next. And you've got to live with what you get.
Speaking of surprises, we'll also talk in future podcasts about some of the spy games and the politics and the secrets that have happened in previous campaigns, because there's some fun stories there.
There's none of that, Melissa.
Oh, yeah, that's all part of it.
It's what you both live on, isn't it?
No. Tom writes the textbook.
Richard writes about it. I used to be what they call
the
minister.
Of it.
I used to be the minister of special effects for a couple of teams. Now, the rules advisors, guys like your Russell Green, who's esteemed, and you know, I've done a couple campaigns with Russell, great rules advisor, and he's very good at this rules and special effects game as well. Your Kiwis are magical.
Well, that's what we like to hear. And that's what a perfect note to end on. We're magical. Hey, thank you so much for joining us, Tom Eamon, all the way from San Francisco, and Richard Gladwell, who joined us in the studio today.
Thank you.
That is episode one done for the Cup podcast. Thank you very much for listening.
We'll be back each week right throughout the Cup with analysis, more behind-the-scenes info. We'll be chatting with members of the team and the major players both on and off the water. You've been listening to the Cup podcast with me, Melissa Chan Green, and Tom McRae.
You've been listening to News Hub's The Cup podcast. For more, visit newshub.co.nz/podcasts.